You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, January 21st, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Mel Gertov, Josh Salem, and Dave Johnson. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Eric Tegadoff, Isabel Charlet, Brian Bull, Edwin J. Vieira, and Crystal Blair. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members, wonderful folks just like you. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. In December, the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality fined Zenith Energy over $300,000 for illegally operating fossil fuel pipelines for 3 years without a permit. Part of that fine meant the controversial oil-by-rail company had to go back to the city of Portland for a new land use compatibility statement, or LUX. Emails revealed through public records by Street Roots show city staff collaborating with Zenith to strategize about how to push through Zenith's new and broader LUX in the wake of bad press. Environmental activists have pushed hard on this issue because of the threat the Zenith site and oil-by-rail operation pose in the event of a major earthquake, the type of major earthquake we get living on the Cascadia subduction zone. City staff say approving a new LUX for Zenith is a purely administrative issue, one where the city council isn't involved, though a number of city councilors campaigned on the issue. At a work session today, Zenith presented their vision for the future, and so did community activists. Councilors asked a number of questions about what impact they could have on the issue. Here's an exchange with Deputy City Administrator Donnie Oliveira.
Councilor Smith, for me, I'm getting emails from folks who think that we have the ability to stop this. And if we don't, we need to make it very clear that we don't, as a body, have the ability to do this. I just want to know where we're at.
Thank you for the question, Councilor. So the space we're in today was created because Councilors Green and Councilor Zimmerman, I met with Mayor Wilson, and Mayor Wilson agreed that it'd be useful for you all to get just a background on the history of Zenith, the LUX before us, and sort of begin to outline the decision points, existing or not, that this council has related to those things. For this particular moment, as we currently understand from a policy perspective and legal perspective, the decision about the LUX rests with the administration. Full stop.
Later, community activists chimed in.
We have Aja DeCoteau, Executive Director of the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission. We have Damon Mott-Story, Oregon Chapter Director of the Sierra Club. We have Nick Caleb, Staff Attorney for Breach Collective. We have Nancy Heiser, a member of Tank the Tanks and the Linton Neighborhood Association, and Kate Murphy, Senior Community Organizer for Columbia Riverkeeper. And to kick us off, I would like to invite Aja to go first. And before you go, I just want to say I thank you for coming here and giving comments today, but I don't want anyone in this room or watching online to be misconstrued that this is a substitute for tribal consultation. This is the bare minimum. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Good morning, Mayor, Council President, and Councilors. Congratulations on your recent elections and beginning the exciting work of reinventing how the city is led and governed. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. My name is Aja DeCoteau. I am a citizen of the Yakima Nation, and I serve as the Executive Director for the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission, also known as CRITFIC. CRTPIC was formed in 1977 by four sovereign tribal nations with federally reserved treaty fishing rights in the Columbia Basin. CRTPIC is not an NGO. In fact, we are a political subdivision of the four tribes we represent, which includes the Warm Springs Tribe of Oregon, the Umatilla Tribe, also of Oregon, the Confederated Tribes and Bands of the Yakima Nation in Washington State, and the Nez Perce Tribe in Idaho. Each tribe signed treaties in 1855, reserving rights that they have held since time immemorial. Among these is the right to fish in all usual and accustomed places, which includes the Willamette River that flows through our city. These treaties reserved our rights to do what we have always done, be good stewards of the land and the rivers where they live, so this sacred first food can sustain our culture today and for future generations. This is what it means to be Waikanishpam, what it means to be salmon people. This treaty right has been interpreted in federal court to make our four tribes co-managers of the salmon resource along with the states and federal government. CRTPIC exists to ensure a unified tribal voice in the overall management of the fishery resources and as managers to defend our treaty rights through the exercise of inherent sovereign powers of our member tribes. Where the salmon go, we go. We work throughout the Columbia Basin from the headwaters in Idaho to the river mouth in Astoria. We employ scientists, fishery managers, enforcement officers, and legal and policy specialists. We follow our tribe's guiding visions for salmon restoration and energy development outlined in our tribal restoration plan called Waikanishmi Wakishwit. The overarching goal of this plan isn't just to put back fish where they live. Equally important is to protect the watersheds where they live as well. This duty and obligation to do this work isn't just for our tribes, it's all of our responsibilities as residents of this place, because salmon are the lifeblood of not only our tribal cultures, but of this entire region. Since our treaties were signed in 1855, salmon have faced many threats, from habitat loss to hydropower impacts to harvest impacts. Salmon today are just a shadow of their former numbers. Tribes, along with federal, states, municipal governments, NGOs, and private landowners, have spent decades trying to reverse the decline of our region's iconic fish, but at every turn, there seems to be a new challenge. Today's work session topic has brought us together to discuss an issue that poses significant potential impacts to the river, to salmon, and to the tribal people who rely on these resources, Zenith's Energy Land Use Compatibility Statement application. CRTPIC has been involved in this discussion since the project was owned by ARC Terminals. Now, years later, tribes and tribal resources are still bearing the burden of these projects. This includes impacts to our fishers from fossil fuel transportation through our fishing sites, the threat of oil spills in the Columbia River, tanker ships traveling through critically important Columbia River estuary habitat, and finally, the effects of more carbon into the atmosphere. In its first land use compatibility statement denial, the city promised to engage in consultation with affected tribal governments. Despite this promise and the impacts of our tribal communities and resources, the city has not formally consulted with the affected tribes at any point in the city's decision-making process. Today, with a new council and a new city governance structure, we have the opportunity to start anew and working together as partners. Together, we can build a positive relationship as governments to fulfill our obligations and duties. And beyond that, to stand together in our common goals to protect rivers and natural resources that make our shared home special. Thank you, and we look forward to further discussion and consultation moving forward.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for that. And next up, we have Damon Motstory.
Good morning, Mayor Wilson, Council President Pertle-Guinea, Vice President Koyama Lane, and Portland City Councilors. I appreciate your attention on this matter, and I'm grateful for the invitation to speak. My name is Damon Motstory, and I'm the director of the Sierra Club's Oregon chapter, representing nearly 58,000 members and supporters statewide, including over 7,800 active and engaged folks in the city of Portland. Our mission is to explore, enjoy, and protect the planet. We've been around since 1892, protecting over 10 million acres of wilderness, retiring 382 coal power plants, and establishing 467 parks and monuments. Many of the forests along the Cascades Crest from Mount Hood down to California are protected thanks to the efforts of early conservationists with the Sierra Club. I want to take a moment to note that this is a dark week for the environment. A second Trump administration gravely threatens our climate and environmental justice. But last time, Portlanders resisted Trump's anti-environment agenda by winning local victories such as the Portland Clean Energy Community Benefits Fund in 2018. Today, we are not helpless. You have the power to make a difference in the fight for our future. A big piece of our responsibility now is doing our part to end the era of fossil fuels before fossil fuel dependency ends us. In addition to fueling climate change, transporting fossil fuels is dangerous and puts communities in danger without consent. In the town of Mosier, 1 hour's drive east of here, an oil train derailed and exploded in the summer of 2016, spilling 42,000 gallons of Bakken crude oil from North Dakota next to the Columbia River. The fireball ignited right by the Mosier Community School, where 160 students were evacuated. Here in Portland, highly dangerous fuels rattle along train tracks through our neighborhoods. More than one quarter of Multnomah County residents live within the half-mile evacuation zone around oil transport lines. 108 schools and 100 childcare facilities are within that evacuation zone, and people of color in Portland are more likely to live in that evacuation zone than white people. So after the oil train fire in 2016 in Mosier, residents here got really good at spotting that 1267 red placard number that marks crude oil train cars, many of which travel to the Zenith terminal. Zenith, for its part, has repeatedly lied and misled the public, regulators, and elected leaders such as yourself. So when we hear that Zenith is transitioning to renewable fuels, be skeptical, because these renewable fuels can be just as volatile and explosive and may be as bad or worse for air quality and the climate if there are faraway feedstocks that lead to deforestation and competition with food crop land use. In fact, research shows California's low carbon fuel standard, over 15 years old, may be leading to an increase in carbon pollution by pumping credit money into capturing methane from factory farm livestock operations. And when we hear that Zenith is pursuing a deal to give sustainable aviation fuel to the airport, let's be skeptical, because that deal is not guaranteed and it would still be at least 50% conventional jet fuel. There are better pathways towards sustainable aviation fuel from green hydrogen research, such as from the well-funded research hub for green hydrogen right here in the Pacific Northwest. And we shouldn't count only on renewable diesel and other biofuels for the transition to clean energy. Electrification, not combustion of fuels, must be the primary approach for the future. And we don't need to count on a company with a bad track record to store and transload SAF components. City leaders should scrutinize those who obscure their practices or violate the terms of their permits and agreements. And the bottom line is that the transition to renewable energy is already well underway. We don't need Zenith in a city increasingly powered by clean electricity, electric and hybrid vehicles, and highly efficient electric HVAC heat pumps. As we fight to defend federal climate policies like the Inflation Reduction Act from being rolled back by Trump Republicans, let's hold the line here in Portland and demand accountability from Zenith Energy. We have the power to change course, and it's up to us to do the right thing and insist upon clarity, consistency, and a livable climate future for all people, animal, and places. Thank you for your time.
Bravo.
Thank you. Next up, we're going to hear from Nick Caleb of Breach Collective.
Thank you, Council President Pertl-Guinney, Portland City Councilors, and Mayor Wilson. My name is Nick Caleb. I'm the climate and energy attorney at Breach Collective. I'm also a registered lobbyist with the city, and have worked on issues around the CEI hub for about a decade or a little bit more. I'd like to begin by invoking the spirit of our late friend Bob Salinger, a man who is always up for a righteous fight. The fight to protect your community from a catastrophic bomb train derailment and massive petrochemical disaster on the banks of the Willamette is a righteous fight, and it is a winnable fight. For you, it starts with this pending Lux application. And just departing from my written marks, I'm already so pleased at the quality of this council and asking good questions. We've had more oversight and transparency over this issue in the last 2 hours than we had in the prior 3 years. So thank you so much for that. And I'll also say that prior to 2022, climate activists, environmental activists had a really strong working relationship with city council and city staff, and that suffered greatly under the last council. And so we are hopeful to return back to that strong working relationship with council. I think it may require some cultural shifts, as I'll be discussing here when I talk about process, but I just wanna put that out as an intention that I have. So when people talk about a backroom deal with Zenith in 2022, they mean that city elected officials and staff struck a political compromise with Zenith and then cobbled together a sham process that shut out the public and frustrated efforts to uncover information about it. An investigation by the city auditor classified communications with Zenith as, quote, going beyond what city officials considered the standard process. During that time, city attorneys and staff acted as stenographers for Zenith, adopting without adequate scrutiny the company's analysis of its compatibility with the city's comprehensive plan. Last week, StreetRoots published an email exchange between City Attorney Lauren King and PP&D staffers from early December 2024. In response to King's questions about a detail of the Lux, a staffer explained, quote, "I mainly just worked with Lauren on writing up a decision document after the agreement with Zenith had already been made at the commissioner level." And again, for years here, we've been hearing a standard phrase that says, we only follow a standard administrative process. We only follow a standard administrative process with Lux. And even just the questioning today, the quality of the questioning brought out that that was not the case. And at least the past two processes with Zenith, there was not a standard administrative process. There was heavy political influence. And in the case of the 2022 Lux, heavy lobbying by Zenith over that process. So this is the clearest statement of what advocates have been saying since 2022. The city's decision was clearly political, not administrative, and is unlawful. And a lot of the subsequent agreements to that 2022 Lux are based on negotiations that happened in that process. So it was a highly important process in the future of all these other permits that were granted. And if there was no integrity in that process, then from our perspective, there's little integrity in subsequent permissions that were offered after it. The oft-repeated assertion that staff were and are just following a standard Lux process with Zenith is absurd, given that the same staff are responsible now for making a decision on a pending Lux application. You can understand how the public lacks trust in their willingness to adequately scrutinize Zenith's claims. These officials have a credibility problem, and accountability falls to this city council. And if it's true, which I think it is, that that process was not an administrative process, it's a process that should be considered differently in this Lux consideration here as well. There should be public involvement and the opportunity to comment on the record before a decision is made. A Lux review must also consider whether an applicant has provided full and honest information to the city. There are serious questions right now about what Zenith has selectively withheld from its 2022 Lux application in order to gain city approval. Given Zenith's past dishonesty and lawbreaking, the representations merit heightened scrutiny and not rubber stamps. I should also mention that in the city staff's report, there was no mention of Zenith's record of dishonesty or legal violations, which is a notable absence, considering that it's well documented and groups like Columbia Riverkeeper have made it available on their website, and we always send it in letters to city. So what can this council do? First, the responsibility for accountability falls to you. Continue to insist on public oversight of Zenith and public involvement in decision-making. Second, restore trust and transparency to city processes by directing that all internal city communications from the 2022 Lux process and conversations with Zenith and its agents be released into the public record. Third, adopt a resolution calling on the mayor to investigate potential violations of Zenith's franchise agreement with the city, including but not limited to unauthorized modification and use of piping. Fourth, pass a resolution calling for a reconsideration of Zenith's 2024 Greenway review because Zenith's lack of disclosure also impacted that process. Holding today's work session and listening session is a big step forward toward accountability. I know I speak for many in attendance when I say that we are eager to support you in these efforts and to celebrate champions of a safer and more disaster resilient city. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Nancy Heiser, who is a member of Tank to Tanks in the Linton Neighborhood Association.
Mayor Wilson, councilors all, my name is Nancy Heiser. I live in Linton. I am here today because I live in Linton, where I see the tanks, hear the trains, and smell the odors from the CEI hub every day. For almost a decade, I have engaged with innumerable experts on the dangers and worked in educating the public. I want you to know why. My home is a 100-year-old retrofitted brick schoolhouse with views to the east of the river and four mountains. To the south and the west, a mossy creek and huge old cedars, forest park. Bald eagles circle overhead. Like my neighbors, I love where I live. As a net, I learned an earthquake would create a catastrophic situation. Our one road would likely be unusable in both directions. The river would fill with burning fuel, explosions, debris. The hills behind our homes, impassable due to landslides, tree fall, fires. Bridges would collapse. First responders candidly told us, and I have ultimate respect for Portland Fire, believe me, they will not reach us. More recently, we have learned that the 70 highest risk hazardous materials stored in the county are stored nearby and will be responsible for thousands of additional deaths from poisons released into the air, plumes that will spread for miles. Now, neither shelter in place nor evacuation are viable escapes for us. If you think, based on what you've heard today, that you have a better understanding of structural stability or resilience, I respectfully submit you do not. This is an extremely complicated situation. Just one point that we learned in reviewing the first step of the SVAs was that almost every single facility, fire suppression systems, are dependent on city water. City water systems, where are those going to be in an earthquake? In a flood? I call on you to listen carefully to the people who are testifying today, many of them far brighter than any others you've heard so far. And review DEQ fuel tanks and seismic stability findings. Corroborate everything you are hearing before you make a judgment. We look to you as the new city council and officials and our new form of government. The situation is what a DEQ director called a hair on fire situation. Others have compared it to Fukushima and Deepwater Horizon. Some of you have heard these. Your very own Mike Myers issued a statement in 2020 that is daunting. Community advocates are aligned on the CEI Hub dangers. Stopping Zenith is a critical first step in preventing potentially the worst disaster in US history. Zenith brings only risk, no benefit to us. We've had 14 years of heightened awareness of the dangers with the reports that have come down. We are no safer now than we were then. When faced with the terrifying scope and magnitude of the potential disaster, will it be fight, flight, or freeze? There can only be one answer. You are the promise of this new government. You're making a critical decision about our collective future. So I urge you that it be ongoing, a collective decision with those on the front lines. Quasi-judicial authority can give you more of a role in this decision. Thank you very much. I've sent you all a longer version of this and resources.
Thank you, Nancy. And then we'll close out the panel with Kate Murphy from Columbia River Keeper.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor Wilson, Council President, and Portland City Councilors. We appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Kate Murphy. I'm a senior community organizer with Columbia River Keeper. We work to protect and restore the water quality of the Columbia River and all life connected to it. There are far more issues than I can cover in the short amount of time that we have today, including the important distinction between the reduction of allowable emissions and the increase of actual real-world on-site emissions and the impacts of Zenith's plan to significantly expand truck, rail, and marine traffic. So we have a lot more information that we can share, and I do hope that we continue this conversation further. I know right now everybody's eager for lunch and you have some questions, so I'll try to get through this quickly. Based on our research, we see a timeline that looks considerably different from the one already presented to you. As you likely know, Zenith Energy has demonstrated a consistent record of violations and dishonesty. The roughly 20 violations that we are currently aware of show that Zenith has been out of compliance the entire time it has been in operation in Portland, and it continues to profit from operations not included in its current land use compatibility statement. The most recent violation addressed illegal construction to expand fossil fuel operations by accessing a marine loading dock at the McCall Oil Facility went undetected for 3 years, during which time Zenith profited from the illegal activities and continues to do so. Also during that time, in order to obtain city approvals, Zenith agreed that any new infrastructure would be used exclusively for renewable fuels. Simultaneously, Zenith was violating that agreement by using the new illegally constructed pipeline to handle fossil fuels. In fact, I believe the first product that was handled in the pipeline to the McCall dock was diesel, a fossil fuel. And although it is outrageous, it should come as no surprise to anyone who's been paying attention, as there has never been any consequences issued that had enough teeth to deter Zenith from its practice of noncompliance. Following a surprise inspection and investigation that came from massive public participation, DEQ issued a fine that I didn't hear mentioned at all in earlier conversation of over $472,000. And a requirement for Zenith to obtain a new LUX that includes the entirety of its operations, which brings us here today. And I want to be very clear about what is happening here. After being caught illegally expanding its fossil fuel operations to incorporate the McCall dock, Zenith is taking this opportunity to ask for even more from the city, including retroactively facilitating permitting years of illegal activities. Zenith's current lock is specific to Zenith's property address, meaning it's a landlocked facility in terms of its locks. Concerningly, despite plans to expand operations, that is also the limit of Zenith's liability. So the pending LUX is a significant expansion, including 3 adjacent properties and 2 additional docks for marine loading that are not currently included on the 2022 LUX. At the same time, Zenith is potentially compromising the agreement with the city to handle products and new infrastructure that are a minimum of 95% renewable fuel. We don't even know the blend that of the quote-unquote renewable fuels they're currently handling. Zenith is now proposing handling sustainable aviation fuel, SAF, which requires a minimum of 50% blend of jet fuel, which is another fossil fuel. So any SAF that they're talking about is required to be blended with 50% fossil fuels before it can be used in aviation. So keep that in mind when they talk about these 100% renewable components. That's not the end product. Additionally, Zenith's very quietly attempting to add a new use to the facility outside of storage and transport. This is a new use in the form of blending, and it's very different from storing and transporting fuels. Very little is known about that plan, and it should be closely analyzed in order to understand the implications for public health and safety. This bears repeating. Zenith is asking you to facilitate retroactively approving years of illegal activities, as well as expanding its operations for fossil fuels and offering a loophole to allow more handling of fossil fuels, and DEQ has already stated that there's nothing in the draft air permit that would prohibit them from increasing their fossil fuel throughput that's not crude through the existing infrastructure. So we want to be clear that historic and ongoing illegal activities are not a valid justification to approve a more expansive LUX, particularly one that will bring greater threats of harm to our communities. Zenith is a fossil fuel company and will continue to be a fossil fuel company after any transition off of crude oil. We are counting on you to see this for what it is, another desperate, greenwashed attempt from a fossil fuel company to pursue profit at any cost. And for years, we've had thousands of community members, nearly 50 neighborhood associations, Multnomah County commissioners, elected officials have all spoken up in opposition to Zenith's harmful operations and the threats that they bring to our environment, to Portland, and to communities along the transportation route. Today, we are here to ask you to do your own investigation. Take your time. Your deadline is not the February 4th deadline. There's a lot of information available that we'd like to share, and we ask that you understand it clearly before making any decisions. And please understand the decision pending is one that carries great consequence and liability for Portland. When someone shows you who they are, you should believe them. When a company commits over 20 violations, you should count on it. And right now, we're counting on you. This is a critical moment for you to decide what kind of industry we want to invest in for the future of our city, a moment where bold, protective local action is more critical than ever. Please listen to the community, have the courage to do what's right, and protect us from the harms of the fossil fuel industry. The LUX should not be approved. Thank you for your time.
Thank you all for being here.
We've been listening into community concerns from today's work session of Portland City Council on the subject of Zenith Energy and the new land use compatibility statement they want for an expanding oil-by-rail operation. You've been listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billing.
Fighting for survival is such a boring battle. Wanna get into my car, wanna drive out to Seattle, where the used record stores have much better prices. But I don't have a car, and I don't have a license. Should I take another walk to the DMV? Get another learner's permit with a picture of me? I'd put it in my wallet along with my $4, and the condom that's still in there that is probably expired. I'd leave home for New York, but New York is where I'm from. I'm just looking for a way to feel my life has begun. Living in the city where I'm working like a walrus, but man, I don't need your money, man, I'm gonna be an artist. And I'm feeling like I wanna do whatever I feel inside. I put it all on paper and I'll hope that people buy it. And my only minor worry is how to pay the rent, but that won't even matter when I lose my apartment. And I'll really have no worries, I'll be just like a cassette that you've taped up the tabs of to put something new on it. And when I hit record, God only knows what I will be. And if there is no God, then it's a better mystery.
Hi, I'm Michael Van Cleek. I'm tapped into the vibe and the rhythm of the river of the city of Portland. And you are too, because you're listening to KBOO Portland.